It's time for another KPI Cafe, a place where conversations happen that aspire to elevate retail automotive. As always, I'm your host, Dane Seville, co-founder of and brand manager for Renew Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that allows me to have all these great conversations with all the wonderful folks throughout automotive retail. A quick reminder, of course, that if you are seeking some used car marketing strategies and tactics, Renew Marketing just released a free ebook to download on used car marketing. So you can go to the website www.reunionmarketing.com. Download yours for free today. We hope it is helpful. So with that being said, let's open the show. Change. That is sort of a common thread in my life lately. Through conversations, through content I'm seeing from people in my network. Even my KPI Cafe from 2 weeks ago. So, recently, content. Melanie Borden, a friend of the show and personal friend, took the risk and made a change in her life, and she's rocking it. She just hired some people for her team. Her team! She now has a team. Very happy for her. Another friend, Marnie McLennan, just returned to automotive. Love Marnie. She returned to automotive by taking a position with SnapCell. Another great change, a change that makes me happy. Very happy for her, very happy for them. Think about in conversations, change. Talked last week with Paul Daly and Kyle Mountseer about AsotuCon. You know, they're trying to change up the game of the automotive conference. If you didn't listen, you go ahead and tune in. It was last week's. And then other content, my own KPI Cafe from 2 weeks ago. If you didn't listen, take a listen. Talking about change, how measured risk is the true agent of change. And I had business examples. I had personal stories. For me, the change, taking the leap to start Reunion was a huge change for me. Change with wrestling. I was in a tag team for years, 10 years, first 10 years of my career as a pro wrestler in a tag team, made the change when I moved to North Carolina to go singles. That's where I got to wrestle, actually get in the ring and wrestle people I watched on television, like Mick Foley, Scott Steiner, Scotty Too Hotty, Hurricane Shane Helms, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I actually even am in an article titled, and don't get me, it might not be exactly this, but it's titled something like Legends Who Wasted Their Last Match on Nobodies. And I am proudly Mick Foley's nobody. But these changes are great. But, how about this? How do you react to change? How do you react to change? I'm curious about that. For me, it's, it depends on the context. Depends on the situation. Starting Reunion, that change was all excitement. No anxiety, all excitement, all in, all go, all firepower, 110%. Actually, if you couldn't tell by my enthusiasm right there and passion, I'm serious. Dating, though. Oh, dating's a change, right? Before I got married, having to meet new people, change up who you're seeing, change up the format, whether you're going out to eat or doing mini, whatever it is you do on a first date. I don't even know anymore. I was awful at it. Oh, dating made me so anxious. I was filled with anxiety, like crushing anxiety. How I made it out of a first date, I will never understand. Because I was not born with riches nor extreme good looks. So what was it? What did I do? I don't know, but I'm happy about it. Cause now, I got the love of my life. So changes, wrestling was a mixed bag. So Reno was all enthusiasm. Dating was all anxiety. Wrestling changing from tag team to singles, mixture of anxiety and enthusiasm. It's not that I wasn't enthusiastic about dating a good looking girl, but anyway, my ADHD is kicking in, I guess. How do you react to change? I want to hear from you, right? I talk so much. I love it when I hear from folks. I love it. So please, more and more of that. If you have any stories to tell about a change in your life, I don't have to share it publicly. Just let me know. Say, hey, keep this private. I just want to share this story. Or, hey, man, I don't mind you using this on the KPI Cafe. Go ahead and share this. It's a really cool thing that happened to me. If you have any examples of change you made in your life, if you have any tips on how to manage change, right? You have some advice for people, please share that with me. Email me at Dane, D-A-N-E, at reunionmarketing.com. Would love to have that conversation. But that's it for setting up just a little bit of conversation today. And the way it ties in today's episode, change, is you're going to have to change how you're approaching your marketing tactics, right? You're going to have to change your strategies, change what you rely on with the deprecation of the cookie and switch to GA4 and privacy updates and everything that is going to happen that didn't happen yet, that we don't even know yet. You have to adapt with the times. So that change is important, and I have a great guest for that. But before that, let's get into what's going on in auto. It's time to learn some more about what's going on in auto, and I have one of my absolute favorite people on this planet, Lori Halt of Charisma Communications. Lori, welcome back to the KPI Cafe and what's going on in auto.
Thank you so much, Dane, and I will echo your statement. You are one of my favorite people, so boom, we're twinning.
I love it. Fantastic. Well, let's go ahead. Let's get right to the meat of it, Lori. What's going on in auto?
So I think the biggest thing I'm seeing, the biggest thing from a manufacturer standpoint and overall industry standpoint is the CHIPS Act. I don't know if you know anything about that, but Biden signed it 2 days ago into law. $2 billion is going into creating automaker manufacturer chips. So what this means, hopefully in a while, is that the chip crisis will further resolve itself and we'll start seeing some more inventory flowing. But I think what that means is a lot of people right now are feeling the pinch of inventory and the pinch of a looming recession. So what I'm hearing the most is dealers are really trying to figure out, how do we hold off a recession, make our buyers feel okay that they can come in and buy cars while not having inventory on our lots. And I think a lot of them are also realizing that the low-hanging fruit is gone. So like, if you've been out acquiring vehicles, if you've been using all of your tactics to find used cars, that has all gone away. We've been doing 2 years of that. And so really, like, what's everyone saying, what's next? What do we do now to ensure that we're getting inventory on our lots as this chip crisis kind of loosens up a bit?
Wonderful. I know you have the importance of what we're talking about at Reunion is future-proofing the marketing when we're getting ready for that, when it's not quite so much boon times, when you're going to have to tighten up that belt a little bit more. What are the best, most efficient strategies for those dealerships? Anything else with regard to CHIPS Act, anything that any new movers and shakers, anything that dealers need to know about what's going on in auto before we close out the segment?
Yeah. So the one last thing I'll say about that, you know, because it is the recession, and I spoke with April Simmons this morning, John Ellis did a great post on this the other day. We need to be proactive. I think dealers need to be very proactive. They need to be figuring out what they're doing, figuring out what their marketing strategy is. And let's start training our salespeople to be acquiring those vehicles. So rather than giving them bonuses for selling, let's start giving them bonuses for bringing it in. So I think the main overall theme is be proactive right now, get your strategy together. If the recession hits, you'll be in much better shape.
Absolutely. Couldn't have anyone say it better. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Getting ready for this change in the industry, the change in the economy, and being prepared. I think, like you said, being proactive is the key term right there. Lori Halter, as always, thank you so much for spending your time for the KPI Cafe and telling us what's going on in auto.
You bet. I always love being on your show. Thanks, Dane.
Everyone stay tuned. We're going to bring in today's guest. Welcome back to another KPI Cafe. I'm excited because I've been having a whole slew of first-time guests into the KPI Cafe. Another first-time guest we've been talking about for a while. We had some scheduling conflicts, but it's happening. Albert Thompson, CEO of Driven IQ. Albert, welcome to the KPI Cafe.
Dane, thanks for having me. I'm ecstatic. To your point, yes, a little bit of scheduling conflicts, had to do a cross-country move, but we are here and I am more excited than ever to be on the KPI Cafe. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. You know, I should ask this before I start recording. Do you prefer Albert or Al or what?
You know, it's so funny. I get asked that all the time. Believe it or not, Albert. Maybe it just makes me feel smarter. I don't know. But, Albert works.
Good. We had a guy at reunion. His name was William, and that's what he liked. William. He preferred not Will or Bill. He liked William. I think he said something similar. He's like, it makes me feel more formal, more smart, more educated. Anyway, so let's talk about this. I like to get into this with guests. Your origin story. So let's get rid of the mystery. How'd you get into automotive, and then what wound up driving you to Driven IQ?
No, that's great. You know, listen, I'm going to take you all the way back because I think it's, I've said this story a couple of times. Some may have heard it, some may have not, but, believe it or not, you know, I've been in automotive now, 25 years, started when I was 14 years old. And, wow. And Dane, you know, what's funny is we were just talking before the show, right? You're in Cleveland. I grew up in a little town in Northeast Ohio, Minerva. So I'm like 14 years old, dying to work, ready to work. Just, you know, want to get out there. Right. So I had like $25 to my name and I throw an ad in the local Minerva Leader. And I basically had no idea what I was doing. No clue. This is like 1997, 96, you know, eBay's just coming out. I put an ad in the article and the newspaper says, I can sell anything to anyone, guaranteed. Call me. And sure enough, man, I start getting these calls. People are trying to sell their Disney collector sets. I think it was a patio set. Anyways, man, for 14 years old, I'm getting my hustle on. And lo and behold, I start making enough money that, you know, I upgrade, I get a new Nikon digital camera, I'm making enough money. And I'm like, man, I'm dying to get a new 97 Honda Prelude. And yeah. Couldn't afford new, but I very, very, very rare pre-owned. And you'll probably know the dealer, Thomas Classics in Akron.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So I went to go see Chad Gano and, you know, walk into the dealership. My father couldn't come. So I had to take my camera with me and I got this Nikon, you know, D3000 or whatever it was back then. And Chad goes, dude, what do you need such a nice camera for? And I'm like, well, I want to take pictures of the car, but it's because I sell things online, you know, like this expert, right? And he goes, well, can you sell that Corvette? And sure enough, man, you know, I knew, you know, I like cars. So I was like, yeah, I can sell that Prowler. I can sell that Corvette. I can sell that Ferrari. And I named off like the next five cars and he goes, do it. So that day, Dane, kid you not, I sat there not knowing what I was doing, 15, you know, about to be 16 years old. I shoot the five cars. I don't even know what to charge the guy. I think I said something like 75 or 100 bucks a car. List them on eBay because at the time nobody had digital photos. I'm sitting there, you know, with the 50, 60, 80 high quality photos. And sure enough, in 7 days, he calls me back up. They're all sold. And that was it, right? So
fantastic.
That was it. So then literally the next weekend, I'm getting calls on my answer machine from, you know, Loudon Motors and, you know, Wake up and those guys and Kane Toyota BMW. And so that was it, man. So, you know, for the next 2-3 years, I literally listed cars. This was before auction 123 now.
Okay.
I was listing cars on eBay. You know, did well there. When I was 18, I sold that business to a company called Mido Negotiator and then made my trek over to the Washington, D.C. market and started with Carfax, became one of their national account executives and Auto Trader. And there it is, the Trade Rev, and had my own store. I did have my own used car store. I always said, man, I was a big believer. I was like, you know, listen, if we're going to talk to dealers and we're going to, you know, proclaim to be experts with dealers, I want to put myself behind the desk. So used car store for a few years and we were doing, you know, wholesale high mileage, you know, churn and burn, but we did well there. And then my last role was with Sinclair Broadcast Group, was the director of operations where we built out Drive Auto. And then about a couple years with Shift on the Infiniti OEM side. And during that time we were building out Driven IQ and here we are today.
Fantastic. Well, the entrepreneurial spirit bit you at a young age, 14 years old, already taking that on. You were much more ambitious at 14 than I was. So kudos to you on that.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Absolutely great story. And glad to have you here. Glad to have Driven IQ going. So, you know, let's kind of dive into it, right? The importance of data cannot be understated. Cookieless world coming now, 2024, right? Where deprecation is being pushed off. Google claims more feedback to improve post-cookie world, as well as more time to get advertisers acclimated. I hate to be a pessimist. Seems like maybe they haven't perfected how to monetize their future, but that's not here nor there.
Yes.
But all this puts a lot of onus on companies to have strategies that rely less on what signals Google offers, more on what they can create, do, implement themselves. So let's first kind of get some context of what this world looks like. Albert, what does today's buyer journey look like, the modern buying cycle look like, especially considering the major shifts since COVID?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, Dane. So, you know, previous to COVID, right? And, you know, my experience has been, you know, primarily digital media advertising and marketing for automotive dealers, right? So, you know, I've seen the coming of age with how consumers are buying. You know, even if you take it back to like 2015, 2016, right? You saw the average consumer, they were still kicking tires, man. They were still going on the Sunday drive. I think Cox did a study back then. I can't recall offhand, but it was something like 5.1 average dealer visits in person before they made an acquisition, right?
Yeah.
And I think we did that again, you know, pre-COVID, I think it was down to like 2.2. And now post-COVID, we're looking at like 1, right? And so what that says to me, and I think all the dealers listening will probably agree, is it's just been a constant, you know, transition to consumers doing all of their buying journey and research online. And COVID, in my thesis, right, is that COVID expedited it, right? So you saw OEMs really start to move towards digital retailing. That started to become a mandated shift. You started seeing that they had to implement 1, 2, 3 of the main providers out there. So that's really pushing that consumer message, you know, buy, ship at home, the COVID being locked down, getting the car to your driveway. We saw that, right? And so it just further propelled that consumer into, hey, I'm going to do all of my research online, right? So if you think about it, today's world post-COVID is, I'm going on to Google, I'm going on to Bing, I'm going on to some sort of search engine, maybe even before a third party, more than likely before a third party advertising site. And I'm going to start my journey local. And, you know, Google, I think what, 66% of searches today are local near me searches. So near me is becoming the most popular search. So what that says to me is we've got a consumer that is highly intelligent, highly sophisticated in terms of how they're going to search and research their consumer purchase. And two, they don't need to go and do the Sunday tire kick anymore. They know their local near me dealers, right? So they're going to search. They're going to look for their particular year, make, model they might be interested in. They're going to hit your dealer site. They're going to look at their VDP. They're probably going to call their wife or their spouse over. They're going to look at all the photos. They're going to do their Carfax. They're going to do their valuation. They're going to do their Kelley Blue Book, whatever the case is. They're doing all of their journey. So think about that from a consumer perspective. The first visit is not going to be the last visit on your site, right? And so I think what we're seeing here, Dane, and again, this is something that we see from a data perspective, because some of the technology that we've been able to access shows us that consumers will come to the site multiple times, make multiple views of the same type of vehicle, and then leave, and then come back, do it again, leave, and come back. And so really, we need to think as dealers, how do I continue to keep re-engaging that consumer? And I think there's this new niche of consumers, what we're calling research intenders. So if you think about the buying funnel, right? The buying funnel, you know, awareness, interest, desire, acquisition. On the acquisition side, right? So ready to buy, there's this new, I believe there's this new niche below ready to buy. So there's below ready to buy, but not yet ready to reveal. So I'm gonna say that again, because I think that's super important. Below ready to buy, not yet ready to reveal. That little niche in the buying funnel, I'm calling a research intender. Means I'm going to go to your site, Mr. or Mrs. Dealer. I'm going to look at inventory. I'm going to do all of my buying journey and go through my checklist. I'm ready to buy. I know more than likely what I want. I probably know exactly what year, make, and model I want to purchase. I'm already probably decided if I'm going to finance, if I'm going to lease, how much I'm going to probably put down, you know. But I'm not quite ready to reveal myself to you yet, right? Doesn't mean that they're not a person that we absolutely, as dealerships, need to get in front of. So I think to answer your question in a very long-winded way, post-COVID has created a new tranche of buyers, you know, that are below ready to buy, you know, research intenders. And how do we as dealers market to those people? And how do we continue to engage them in a true remarketing treatment?
So, you know, that's great. I love, you know, the whole idea, you know, I think to impress upon people, especially as attribution conversations continue to happen, the journey isn't linear. Like you said, they come to your website multiple times. They have third-party websites. They have all these different resources. And so it's not just like one straight, one-size-fits-all path to purchase. So I love that. I love the idea of this research intender. And then you got to think about, you know, so here's why I want to set how I want to set this up. The fact that majority of shopping is done online, and we have a future where we're going to need to be more self-sufficient advertisers.
That's right.
The more important it is to know who our customers are and pull out what their intentions are, aligning our content, our strategies, our tactics with the intent of the consumer. Now we have fragmented platforms, right? Silos almost. You know, you have Facebook with all of its network partners, Google, GBP, its other products, Amazon, its subsidiaries. There's just so much going on. And, you know, then we're trying to hit them from brand awareness down to the, I'm going to use your term. I like this, from brand awareness down to not yet ready to reveal folks, research intenders. So with this in mind, how can dealers and their partners, and you can take this as a holistic thing. You can focus on just the research intenders. If you have insights on from brand awareness on down, however you want to approach this. With all of this in mind, all these things happening, how can dealers and their partners better market to their audiences?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, Dane, I think the way that I would approach it, right, is to continue to always keep that customer journey first in my mind. And that's the main focus, right? Never forget it. Never forget that, you know, even though we're dealers and we have, you know, the transaction and we're dealing with that part of it, never forget what that journey is, right? And that journey starts with someone going online, someone doing a very directive search, and to your point, ready to buy, not ready to reveal. So traditionally speaking, and for the last 15, 20, 25 years, we've been buying media and conquest audiences the same way, right? You know, whether that's through third parties, through search engine marketing, it doesn't matter. You know, that could be traditional advertising, offline, online. We're driving all of this traffic to our site, and we're spending thousands of dollars to get them there. And I think the best way to look at it is there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. I think it's absolutely part of the buying journey. You know, whether we have inventory or not, that's a whole other conversation for another show. but, you know, from that standpoint, we know we're getting the customers to our site, right? And so it's like, it's our property. And to your point, there's all these disparate sources of data, right? There's, you know, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Googles, and all of them have insights into your customer. And the reality is the dealers don't have that same level of insight into their own customers, right? They might have analytics. You know, they might have some information on conversions, but you know, the not yet ready to reveal, that research intender, who are they? Right? So 98% of your site traffic comes in to your dealer site. You might get 1-2%, I think it is, digital conversion online from, you know, a VDP, form fill, DR. Yeah. It's about 2%. So what other business do you know would allow, go out and spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in media marketing budget to allow 98% of their inventory or traffic or what you may call it, just completely fall out the bottom, just leak. It's literally data leakage. So I think the way that I would approach it is that's my first focus, right? My first focus is how do I protect my own walled garden, if you will? How do I learn who's engaging on my site? And I mean, listen, I spent 10, 20, whatever thousands, umpteen amount of dollars to get them here, right? So let's call that outreach, because I think that's how most people know it, right? That's my outreach conquest audience. So the same way I have a research intender, I think there needs to be what's called the inreach audience.
Okay.
Inreach. Think about this. These are people that have engaged on my site, that have looked on my VDPs, that have looked at inventory, and I don't have a marketing or media strategy to approach my inreach. So, you know, to answer your question, you know, this is, and it's a process, right? You have to learn to identify, okay, how can I start to capture this inreach audience? And when we say inreach, you know, we're thinking about, you know, a technology that either a dealer invests in and buys, or they can partner with solutions out there that can capture who those users are, that can actually tie it back to a household so they can figure out who these individuals are, and then build those into custom audiences, and then build a strategy that reaches out to those individuals in a personal, people-based way, right? Because, and I think this is the best way for dealers to kind of get this, it's your digital up.
Yeah.
It's your digital up. You literally
like
got
that.
Them. You got them to your lot. It's a digital up, and now you're gonna not work it.
Yeah,
we got to work our digital ups.
I like that. I love that whole concept. I love the idea of your own walled garden, right? I always have referred to the dealer website as the land of no competitors. It's, you know, with all the third party sites and everything else, your inventory is competing with other dealers' inventory. That investment in championing your own website has always been a major crux of a lot of what our communications and reunion we have for dealers.
Yeah.
So I like this idea of in-reach audiences. Let's pursue that a little bit. So personalization is key.
Yep.
People want to feel like the advertising is relevant to their needs. So aligning the content to their intent is a foundation, but there's more to it than that. It's also understanding who they are, what they're interested in, how they're interacting with your content, your VDPs, for example, where do their interests lie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So having a bit of context this will give better context to better inform our decision-making optimizations. So with this idea of in-reach audiences, can you talk a little bit more about like the context of this customer and like the contextual journey that people go on a dealer's website?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the best way that I like to approach this when I'm speaking to my retailers or mostly agencies that we work with, you know, that work with their retailers. Here's the question you ask yourself, right? A lot of times the OEMs might have a military appreciation, right? That's an incentive. There might be the college, right? Student, right? College summer days, whatever. We've got the notion that we want to advertise to our consumers in a very contextual way. We have no strategy from the OEM down to the dealership on how to do it. So the question here is, Mr. or Mrs. Dealer, if I asked you to go into your website traffic today, and I wanted you to pull out the last 30 days of the users that looked at all your Chevy Silverados, used Silverados, that are 18 to 35 years old that are in the military. Could you do that for me? They would say, I have no clue on how to do that, right? So it's not just VDP views, right? It's not just, and listen, kudos to the industry for working towards trying to align, you know, intent with, you know, inventory. But it's more than that, right? It's understanding your consumer profile as a whole. It's hey, if I'm going to advertise to those that are in the military, I'd like to know 18 to 35 year olds that are in the military that have actually looked at a Silverado in the last 30 days that are making 60,000, that have a 600 FICO and greater. And then being able to have a way to identify, have a pathway to mine that user and that data to be able to your point, have your own walled garden, your own land of no competition, and then create that custom hyper segmented audience, right? And then market to those hyper audiences. I think it's going to be less dangerous in the future. I think it's going to be less about big budgets and spray and pray. It's going to be more about hyper segmented, hyper focused, laser targeted, really people based strategies, and then gearing towards loyalty.
Yeah. What are some even foundational tips, insights, how can dealers start to do this? What are any perspectives you can offer so that dealers can stop the big budget spray and pray and start trending towards this sort of segmentation and audience people-based strategies?
Yeah, I think the key is finding a partner. I mean, you know, unless there's a dealer that's going to really go out and make that investment in identifying privacy compliant consumers, that meet the data regulations, and being able to identify that, I think there's good partners out there, you know, companies like Reunion, right? You know, businesses like this that understand, the need to really identify audience, you know, data and how to pull that audience from your site to create these hyper audiences. That's step one, right? Identifying a true technology data partner to help you accomplish that. And then two, once you identify that, start to align those goals with those custom audiences, and then really start to measure the efficacy, right? Measure how you're performing with your in-reach audiences as opposed to your outreach. And then maybe you can start to titrate off that outreach and you might just focus 100% on your in-reach.
Yeah, wonderful. As I tell guests often, and I'm so fortunate that I am connected to so many really smart folks that never have to do this, but I always preface some questions with, take as much time as you need. And if we need to edit stuff out, edit blank space out, we will. But right. I've never actually had to do that yet. And I trust we still won't.
Nope.
So with this in mind, finding this data tech partner, are there some questions dealers can ask, or are there some red flags dealers can notice to really differentiate, to really distinguish, discern the real true good data partners from people just trying to sell them on a superficial service?
That's a really great question. Absolutely. 100%. You know, the first question I would always ask, you know, to be able to determine, you know, the real data partners from the vaporware, if you will, you know, the asset, right? Is there anything that you're going to be able to provide me, the dealer, that ensures me that you own this data? Number one, that you legally own this data and that it's legally compliant, right? That's number one, because you last thing we want is to be able to capture data and then have some consumer saying, how in the world did you identify me? And then all of a sudden, you know, I don't know if I froze.
No, I can still hear you.
Okay, gotcha. My screen froze, so we might have to do the edit. But yeah, make sure that the data is legally compliant. Make sure that that partner owns it. Make sure that they're storing that registration data. I mean, there's legal processes, Dave, where you have to store certain amounts of double opted, triple opted data in for 7+ years if you're ever audited. So that's number one. Number two, you know, make sure in writing that you guys can get your data as an asset owned, right? Because it's your data. That's number one, right? It's your data. These visits coming into your site, at the end of the day, that's the dealer's data. Those users that have engaged have already become market compliant. They're opted in. So at the end of the day, whether they fill a form out or not, you should have full perpetual exclusive rights to that data to market it however you want. So that's number two. What are my rights as a dealer? And do I get full perpetual exclusive rights? Can I push this into my CRM? Can I own it on demand? And then if needed, can we audit behind it? And then I think at the last end of it, and this is more, you know, granular, you know, getting something that shows how they're sourcing the data themselves, right? And I say this because, again, not to despair any other businesses out there, but there are companies out there that claim to be able to identify users and turn them into data. There's a big difference between a technology that can say use like an IP address, for example, and then pull back a simple white pages listing. Like okay. That's the best way to say, oh, here's this this user, here's an IP address, and then boom, here's what I think in this big data set over here that looks like basically 123 Main Street, and there's a white page listing. That calls to question that true ownership piece versus, hey, this is a true piece of technology that's a first party technology that really is pulled from an asset that is owned and, you know, is part of a bigger, you know, identity graph that's, you know, being resolved with a real strategy behind it. So super important. I would ask at least those three things.
Wonderful. Awesome. Albert, I if I could keep you all day to keep talking, I would, but I know that we both have busy schedules, and I'm sure you have plenty on your plate for the rest of the day today. But I just want to kind of close it out with this. I mean, we've covered a lot. Research and tenders, ready to buy but not ready to reveal, talking about your own walled gardens, talking about data technology partners. I mean, so many, I have a page of notes, so many more details I can't even recall right in the moment that we've covered today. So any last insights, tips, advice for dealers to help future-proof their marketing with all this coming changes in data privacy and cookies?
Honestly, Dane, the last piece of advice that I would give is the time is your competitor. That's it. The clock is ticking. You mentioned in the beginning, right? We did get some extra time. But here's the thing is that little bit of reprieve isn't going to last forever. Data is gold. Data is gold. Data is gold. You need to own it. You need to start now. And you need to become independent from anything that has your business lenient on something else. And so that's my only piece of advice is the time is now. It's not going to go away. The clock is ticking.
Great. And, you know, to close this all out, I'm certain that people, dealers have gotten plenty of value from today. There's still so much more to explore. Even what we talked about in like this half hour, I mean, just even the three tips you left, the three questions, red flags, you know, the three things, three ideas you left with them. There's still like the idea of graphs and this is the statistic, blah, 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 all these terms that I probably don't even understand. There's even more to dig into that. If dealers want to learn more about this idea of intenders, of ready to buy yet not ready to reveal. So in all this stuff you have shared, which I'm sure is a lot of what Driven IQ is doing, right. How can people reach you to learn more about you and your company?
Yeah, no, that's great. Listen, you can always find us on LinkedIn, Albert Thompson, you know, Driven IQ, or www.driveniq.com. There's a contact form and feel free to reach out, or you can even email me directly, Albert@driveniq.com.
Awesome. Well, Albert Thompson, CEO of Driven IQ, thank you so much for spending some time with the KPI Cafe.
Hey, always a pleasure. And thank you so much, Dane. Thank you for your patience. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You too. And everyone, you stay tuned because you're going to learn about what's happening on next week's KPI Cafe. Woo-wee, that was a lot of information. I don't know about you. I learned a lot right there. And I feel like there are many, many more layers of the data tech onion to pull back. Many, many more conversations about changing up your strategies to align with where things are heading. I really thank Albert for that great conversation. Next week, another first-time guest, someone I've admired for a long time. I'm excited to talk to her, Carrie Wise. Carrie Wise will be coming on the show. Primary thing that I told her I want to talk about, because I don't talk about it often, but I think it's important. Diversity in your talent pool. And with her work in Wocan and her being a leader in automotive retail for years upon years now and her vast experience, I could have her on for any multitude of topics. But this is one that I really, there's not everyone that can talk about the importance of diversity and really how to build a diverse workforce. So I think she would be wonderful as a guest for that and for many other things. And you can guarantee, I'm sure she'll be a repeat guest one day soon. But I'm excited for that Carrie Wise next week. So that's it for this week's KPI Cafe. I hope all of you have a great week, and I'll catch you at next week's KPI Cafe.